Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk by Senior Meditation Instructor Kathy Lamo Jackson is entitled, A Buddhist Walks into a Hospital. As a hospital chaplain, Kathy Lamo has gained valuable insights regarding end-of-life issues, both from a spiritual and a temporal point of view. In this talk, she discusses the importance of sharing our wishes regarding our medical care with our loved ones, as well as in a living will and other legal documents. We examine how these steps can help to ensure that our medical and spiritual needs are met, and those closest to us are spared the burden of making difficult decisions for us in a time of crisis. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Looks like just a few more people are coming and then we'll start. Why don't we do the refuge prayer together now? Om Sanje Chodan Soki Chodnam La Jancho Bardu Dadi Gyatsochi Dagi gin so gibe sunangi dro la benche sanje robar shok again sanje chodan so ki chonam la jan chobar du dani gya tso chi Dagi jin so gi be so nam gi Dro la ben chi san je dro bar shok. In the Buddha, his teachings, and the order most excellent, I take my refuge for the sake of all sentient beings. May all beings be free of suffering. So when you chant that, you can just let it rip and chant it from your heart. Never worry how your voice sounds to anyone else, because it's really a song reaffirming your refuge vows and your bodhisattva vows. So this morning, I may be joined later with Dr. Sarah Johnson, who's a palliative fellow at Ohio Health. But if not now, she'll be in this class. We'll have part two in December. And before we end the class today, I'll give you homework. And I'll make sure, I hope I can get something on our website to make sure you know what links I'm talking about. So first, I'll just speak. Lama Kathy asked if I would speak a little bit about myself, and I will. I've been coming to Columbus KTC, wherever we're located, for 31 years. And I've been most grateful for its existence and for the community and the opportunities we have of bringing teachers from around the world here. We've had, of course, Kempo Karcho Rinpoche. Sitchi Rinpoche came many times. I saw Jama Rinpoche. We just had so many amazing teachers come over the years. And that will happen again, I think, as we expand into the new building. Can everyone hear me? Okay. As many of you know, I tried to do three-year retreat three times. The third time I went in for 9 months. And I think I have some type of anxiety disorder, and my husband had to have surgery, and Rinpoche gave me permission to leave. And his ending words to me were, I can't figure out your karma, but there's got to be something you're supposed to be doing. And then a few years later, he spoke to me about serving the sick. And he wanted me to become a chaplain, he wanted me to be trained in hospitals to understand what goes on, and to be trained not only as a Buddhist chaplain. Of course, when you're trained in a hospital, you're trained to serve everyone, mostly for their emotional and spiritual needs, not always religious. And Rinpoche said, and when you're done with that, you're to share some of it. And I chose today's topic a long time ago, and Lama Kathy and I have spoken on some of this before, but today's a little bit more of the legal talk that I think you need to hear from someone. So I have been present at hundreds of deaths, and each one is unique, And these are deaths not only at Ohio State, but at different hospices, nursing homes, and in people's homes. I've never done it outdoors yet. That's one of my goals. I hope to have that someday. Maybe that'll be me. And each one has not only, besides been an honor, but I've learned a lot more about myself and what I thought how things would go. And no matter how strange things happen in the hospital, because of the loving, tender care by the nursing staff, the chaplain staff, social work, and doctors, it always seemed to work out. But today we're gonna talk more about you. Many of you are young. Some of you are, I'm in 67. And I remember a few years ago, I had some of these legal documents, living will, and healthcare power of attorney done. Anyone out here have that done? Yay! Then you can leave. And you know you can update that at any time, right? You can always change it. Because this is always, I consider it a kind of a legal conversation. And this is always a conversation we're having with doctors and ourselves, and maybe you have, your taste has changed. But today's talk is going to be about what do you want if you're hospitalized? And maybe things go south in a different direction than most of us ever considered. The title of my talk was A Buddhist Walks into a Hospital. And there's a couple of routes you can go in. You go in for, I went in for gallbladder surgery, everything went great, and went home 2 days later. That's it. But I've been at the death of so many people where they say he came in because he had a cold. And there he is a week later with a tube down his throat. Nobody knows what to do. Everyone is scared to death to make a decision. And so the medical staff have to make that decision, encouraging family to close it up, to, you know, let him go. No, I don't want to make that decision. Can any of you tell me why people don't want to be the one to make the decision? Yep, you got it. That is the core. People are afraid they're killing someone. I've been with families of 20 people. Nobody wants to make a decision. Well, you know, the person who makes the decision really is you. And you can make that decision ahead of time. And you can change any part of that, or any of it, or none of it. I'm going to give two stories. One patient, when I was first a chaplain, they had heard I worked with Buddhists that die, so they said, oh, good, we're going to give you a cancer floor. And I just met palliative doctors, and these are doctors that work with goals of care for pain, but also have been fully trained on how the death process works, how to make sure the patient doesn't suffer during that, and how they're really trained on how to communicate. And I was at a palliative meeting, and I said to the doctor, you know, Joe Schmo down there, who patient could not talk, had two family members who worked in the hospital, and they begged me to make sure that the team didn't do anything. And the team, by the way, was waiting outside the door to take him to ICU, where he would probably die with a tube in his throat looking at a ceiling. Because of his type of situation, that is how it probably would have happened, until he closed his eyes. I told the palliative doctor, and he jumped up from a meeting and said, come with me. And I had never seen this done before. He said to the patient, he said, we know each other. This man was not a priest, but very involved in the Catholic faith, had married his children, had baptized his kids. I didn't know you could do that without being a priest. He's a really special dude. And his goal in life was to die looking out a window. His room had a really nice window, which was kind of rare in this old building. And the doctor said, I remember your goal. Do you want to stay in this room to look out that window? And the man didn't talk. So the doctor put two hands up. And then we got a sign. One said yes and one said no. And he held it up. The man said yes. And the doctor said, We can give you a lot of pain medicine so you not have any pain, but you will probably fall asleep and not see your family. What do you want to do? No. And he said, and then he explained, they'll give him a little bit. Yes. So the doctors are actually on your side. They want to help. I'm not here to advertise Ohio State, but it kind of opened my eyes. And over the years, I've seen more and more doctors become much more well-versed asking for a chaplain, talking to family way ahead of time. And so, anyway, so that's just one of the stories. My other story is with a Buddhist. Lama Kathy asked me to go visit somebody at someone's home near me, and I don't think many people knew this young gentleman, so I won't mention him. He had a brain tumor. He was in the year five, and his speech was slightly affected, and soon he was not going to be able to speak. He called us in, and we were talking about Buddhism, and I'm kind of a little sharp, so I just said, let's talk about bottom line here. How long do you have to live, and how can we help you? And he said, so we had that conversation. I was with him 5 months later in hospice, while as his wife is sitting in bed holding him. His family was there. I was doing a Buddhist practice for him called POA, ejecting his consciousness. He was fully trained in everything. This guy had really, he went to Big Sur, Sir, sorry, Sur is a Buddhist practice. He went to Big Sur. He'd always wanted to go there. And so, because we always talked about the bucket list, what do you want to do? This is your time now to really use it well, instead of just sit around and be drugged out and all that. So he was a great example of how you could really do it. It was a very wondrous time to be with him at that time. So, not today, but actually I do have, I only have three copies of this. So there are a couple of things legally you can do. One is called a living will, and the other is called a healthcare power of attorney. Let's just talk about a living will first. This is something you can do right now. You do not have to have a notary do anything to it. It's just you and some other people as witnesses signing it. And this living will, basically, I'm just going to read because this is actually, it's legalese, but it's very well done. The purpose of this living will declaration is to document your wish that life-sustaining treatment, including artificially, oh, I forgot, this is really technical. I'm going to look at one other thing. Hold on. This just goes on and on with list. A living will means a document that lets me specify health care I want to receive if I become terminally ill or unconscious and cannot make any wishes at that time. This would be an example. If you were somewhere and no one knew you and other people you had signed it that make these decisions weren't there, sometimes people don't want to have anyone get involved with their healthcare except themselves and the doctors. So they would sign this document. And you can also specify on it that just to let you know, when a patient is dying, to drink or eat is very painful for their body. So, you know, most people, when they die, they start fasting. That's the natural way that we die. The body starts changing. And so sometimes if hospitals aren't told what to do, they'll force fluids and nutrition. You could say none of that. And it's a very, very simple document. It's simply signing. I'm going to just look here. And I have several copies of this any of you can look at. It's just your signature. It says, I understand the purpose and effect of this document and sign my name for this living will on the date and where in Ohio. And then you just have witnesses, and that's all. So have any of you ever thought about something like this? Of course, those that have done the living will have. Have you ever done it? So you know I'm a chaplain, and you know I don't just work with people that are dying. I work in an emergency room. What do you guys think I see there? I see a lot of people that didn't plan to be there. A lot of people, I'm particularly saying this to the younger people in the crowd. You never know when our time is up. No one knows that, but it's guaranteed. It is guaranteed. So it's nice to kind of make some decisions now. Now, one reason people are afraid to do this because they think they won't get any care if they sign up. Like, they're just going to throw me in a corner. And that's not true. Healthcare professionals love it when somebody knows what they want, how they're having an active role in this type of situation. So this is an extreme situation. Go ahead. At the end of life?
Yes.
Or in this situation? I don't know. I mean, if it was in the same, you'd have to ask your doctor. That's why I was going to have Lama, or have Sarah here. She'll be at the next. Sarah's not here, is she? My glasses are off. I don't know. You have to ask your doctor. It's a good question. I do know one answer to it, a question I've been asking. What if I'm from out of state? I'm on vacation, you know, in upstate New York, and something happens, and my documents are all with Ohio. That's fine, because that document will then, whenever you do these type of documents, you give them to your doctors. You can often give them to you make a copy of it. I recently attended a talk by Dr. Ira Bayek. He's a famous palliative doctor, wrote Dying Well. He said his whole family has it on their phone, you know, has a copy of that. So, but I don't know if you can actually request that, because the doctor may be out of town, or, you know, insurance is a whole other Magella, I don't know how that would work. So I'm going to talk for a minute about tools. I think this is the biggest thing out of this class today. And the first tool every hospital has this, and they call it something different, but inside are 44 pages. Is Ohio State, no, usually about 43, 44 pages. When you only need to read about two or three, but this is it. Well, you know, they want to make sure you understand. It has beautiful definitions of everything. But the first part is the living will. Then they go through a whole section about donating organs and all that, which I'm not going to really touch much on today. And then the second part will be what we'll talk about in a few minutes, which is having someone else make decisions for you. So you can get this at probably any doctor's office. You can also download this for the state of Ohio, because all kinds of agencies are part of this. Ohio State did not put this together. This was put together by all kinds of different alliances. So if you just looked up Ohio Advanced Directives or Ohio Advanced Care Planning, you can pull up these documents as PDFs, or just print them out, fill them out, and take them to your doctors. But the second one, you do need a notary, that was a good one. So let's see the time here. So I want to, for a moment, do talk about references. There's a lovely project called the Conversation Project. They've put out so many different type of flyers. It's I think it's nonprofit, but I won't swear to it. It's put together by writers, physicians, social workers, chaplains, different ministers. And there's one on when it comes to the end of life, talking matters. And we're going to go through this today. But I thought I'd show you the others. These are all free. The next one is, and I really like this one a lot, how to choose a healthcare proxy. That would be the person you're choosing. And the second part is how to be a healthcare proxy. Because this isn't something where I say to Marilyn, okay, you're doing this, we sign the papers, and we never talk about my wishes. There's going to be a big conversation going on and on. The third one I love is, and my favorite maybe, is how to talk to a doctor. I don't think enough people know that he's your doctor as much as you're his patient. But you pay him to help take care of you. So and a lot of doctors love it if you get involved in your life. And there's one on having conversations with seriously ill children, and one on if your parents have Alzheimer's. So I really love this. I talked to Dr. Sarah Johnson about this, and she said, oh, that was going to be part of what I was going to present today. She is working with Ohio Health in palliative medicine right now. And the two heads of the unit were some of the founders of palliative medicine. And they worked with these people, and they came up with something called the cards. They're like flashcards. And she said, you're given a whole pile of cards with all these decisions. You make a pile of three. One, decisions you really want, things that you don't care about, and ones that are neutral. And then you keep working on that pile that you want down to three decisions. So I thought, for a few minutes, I'm going to go through here. But before I continue, are there any questions? Okay, so let's go through here. But before I go through the grim and all that stuff, I thought it'd be really fun to listen to something. I can't use the TV here. I would be watching YouTube right now. Have any of you heard of Dr. Atul Gawande? He wrote Being Mortal. And the subtitle is Medicine and What Matters in the End. I'm sure Jim has. His book is great. It's every library, Being Mortal. So I am going to put about three different references for today's talk on our website. So he has a YouTube. He's all over the place. He is so famous, but still very humble. He is a surgeon and realized over time he doesn't do a really good job speaking with patients and families on these topics. So he went, and there on YouTube, there is a really nice blurb called How to Talk End-of-Life Care with Dying Patients. So let's just not even worry about the word dying right now. Just say patients right now. And he spoke with several doctors to see what do they talk about. And one doctor particularly shared with him four points that she always tries to touch on. And it was this. And I think this is wonderful for any time you're in a hospital or seeing a doctor, to know, does a patient know their prognosis? Or like, I have high blood pressure. Maybe we should, invite more discussion about that. What are their fears about what's to come? What are their goals? A lot of people think when someone is told they're going to hospice or nursing home or they're going to home hospice, that's the end of their life. I'd say for a lot of people, it's kind of the beginning of their life. Besides goals, maybe we could rephrase it. What would they like to do as time starts to run out? The fourth one is, what are the trade-offs that they're willing to make? And I think I mentioned that to you, that first patient. How much suffering are you willing to take in order to maybe be aware? And I know, and to be awake and talk with family. As a Buddhist, that's a really big thing for a lot of us. In January, Lama Kathy and I are going to do a lot more around Buddhist practices, end of life, and how the whole end of life process is. But I think many of you probably study this, but a synopsis is, after we die, there is a small window where we can become enlightened, become a Buddha. It's very small. As we're dying, it affects, and as we live, I should say, it affects our next rebirth. So it's kind of a big deal. So the last thing I want to do is be laying there with my dear friends in ICU who I adore, with a tube down my throat, because I have no idea what my mind, and on a lot of meds. I know what I would prefer, which would be to be able to sit up or lay down correctly. And sure, I would never say no if I was in excruciating pain, but I want to be able to do that practice. And because it's an amazing experience as we go out, if we're able to be conscious during going through the bardo. And if not, of course, many of us are trained to be that person, to be there for them and to do the practice in their presence. And that's what I do. So Lama Kathy does. And many people that have been trained in POA do that. But I think those are really interesting points this doctor brought up. Instead of doctors saying, let's talk about, how often do you want to, have a CPR done to you if code blue means your heart stops beating. Yes? Could you speak up a little bit? Everyone's different. Rinpoche said it's really up to the individual. we can take, you could definitely take morphine on very small doses. It just depends on the patient and what they're comfortable with. The patient may be concerned about their family and not want to be awake and conscious during their death. It's all up to you. And so the Buddhists do not give any recommendation. Yeah. Because Rinpoche said we're all so different. I mean, I know what I'm going to try and do, but who knows if that'll work out. I may, on the way home, die in an accident and have no say. So because we never know. You know, what I love is Lord Buddha taught so much about suffering and impermanence. And this is kind of what we're really talking about today is we never know. Because this is all so impermanent. Our karma drives a lot of things around, and we don't have full awareness of that. Sharing what? Oh, I already said. I would like to be, if I have to be in a hospital, I will not be heavily medicated so I can be awake to do my practices. If that's feasible. See, if is the big word here. So maybe in some ways this is kind of a waste of time, this class today. No, thank you. But I think it's important to start talking about it. So I love that doctor made those points, though. Instead of talking about whether or not you're going to have a tube in you or if we're going to do CPR on you and break your ribs and maybe you'll come back, maybe you won't. Instead, she talked about prognosis, fears, goals, and trade-offs. Everything we do in living, right? Everything we do in our regular life. And so we shouldn't look at if we're having diagnosis or something, that's it. That's just part of the life. I've seen people, I admire some women on YouTube. They have cancer and they live in vans and they go all around to national landmarks. I just think that's amazing. And then they go back and get their chemo pills every month or something. I mean, why not live your life? Okay, so that was that. That was the first referral, the reference. Then let's talk about this conversation kit. This is actually a really well-written handout. They first talked about why talking matters. I didn't know this till last night. They started an initiative called the Sabbath Conversations. And in the month of November, asking churches to start getting more involved. So here we are having these conversations. So the first thing are some interesting statistics. 90% of people say that talking with their loved ones about end of life is important. 27% have actually done so. 80% of people say that if seriously ill, they would want to talk to their doctor about wishes for medical treatment toward the end of life. 7% reports have had this conversation with their doctor. So as you can see, we need to talk a little bit more about this. The state of Wisconsin had an initiative maybe 5 or 10 years ago where if you were admitted for, even if you went to your doctor's office or in a hospital, a specially trained counselor sat with you and had them fill out these forms. It was almost mandatory or highly encouraged. And they found that if people were in the middle of crisis, everyone knew what the patient wanted. Everyone did what the patient wanted because they had had these conversations, not necessarily in the hospital, but outside before they were ever having to be heavily admitted. Okay, so those are the statistics. Now let's go through some of the questions because I do like the questions. All right, so let's see. No, that's about feelings. Let's just get straight to them. So here are some examples of this handout. And the cards that you would, I think there's, Jim, have you ever done these cards? With the conversation project? I think Sarah said there were 100 cards that you have to go through. But let's get right down to it. As a patient, I would like to know, and these are two extremes, only the basics about my condition and treatment. I don't want to know anything else. Then the other side of the scale is, I want to know all the details about my condition and treatment. So think about that for a second. None of you have to tell me how you would vote on that. But as doctors, this is the second question, as doctors treat me, I would like A, my doctors to do what they think is best. And the other, these are five ticked points. The other side is to have a say in every decision. I've met a lot of those patients. They're awesome. Next one, if I have a terminal illness, I would prefer to not know how things are progressing. Or the other extreme, know my doctor's best estimation for how long I have to live. So now here are a few more. How long would you want to receive medical care? Indefinitely, no matter how uncomfortable treatments are. And the extreme is quality of life is more important that to me than quantity. Any of you ponder that? Yeah, are you saying yes or are you asking a question? I'm sorry that. It said, how long do you want to receive medical care? The second one was, just quality of life is more important than quantity. It didn't say no medicine. It just said, you're more concerned about your quality of life than just being drugged, having a lot of heavy medicines. Because, you know, with medication comes the side effects. You have to be aware of that. The next question is, what are your concerns about treatment? I'm worried that I won't get enough. Other extreme, I'm worried that I'll get overly aggressive care. Anyone ever fear that? I do. I see. What are your preferences about where you want to be? Some people would say, I don't mind spending my last days in a healthcare facility. And other people say, I want to spend my last days at home. Anyone want to be at home or in the hospital? So it's your decision. And as I said earlier, I'm amazed how many times patients do things for their family. And family has never said, what do you want? They just do it for their family, and they often stay there for their family. Because many times a terminal patient will be told, well, you have 6 more months to live, or no, let's say a month to live. And the patient will say, I don't want my family to have to see me like this. I don't want my family to go through this. I'll just go to a short-term facility. And then you have other patients that say, yeah, and I'm going to have everyone come to my house, and we're going to have the biggest family reunion we've ever had. And I've seen people and heard stories where they meet everyone in their life. They talk to everyone, and they do things that they want. So this is your life, your choices. So let's see, that was how long and where you want to be. And a few more questions. There's only three major other questions. How involved do you want your loved ones to be? I sort of just touched on that. I want my loved ones to do exactly what I've said, even if it makes them uncomfortable. And the extreme is, I want my loved ones to do what brings them peace, even if it goes against what I've said. And this is regarding privacy. When the time comes, I want to be alone, and other people never want to be alone. Have any of you thought about that? Anyone want to be alone? I don't mind, but yeah, some people do. We sort of came in alone. Well, our mother was there, but definitely there. And then when it comes to sharing information, I don't want my loved ones to know everything about my health, and doctors are very sensitive about that, and everyone. Or other people on the other end, I'm comfortable with those close to me knowing everything. So after you go through that step, it says, look at your answers. What role do you want to be part of your end of life and your loved ones? And then the next question is, there's three ticks. What do you feel are the three most important things that you want your friends, family, and doctors to understand about your wishes or preferences for end of life? Does anyone want to share with me even anything we haven't talked about today? Any preferences you would want? Hello. Marilyn?
I want to be able to do practice, so I would love to have some other Buddhist there to help me.
Yeah. That's a very good point, and that's why we're going to have the class in January, Lama Kathy, because I think not everyone here is familiar with the death process, going through the bardo, and what practices that we have to offer. So I'm glad you brought that up. Anyone else? Yes. No. More and more so, I'd say. And as I said earlier, we serve everyone, not just Buddhists. I have so few Buddhist patients. I should just call myself a chaplain anymore, almost. But what we do have around the country is a network with our organization, kagyu.org, our monastery KTD. We have a list of chaplains, and so if people are in other cities, they could always find out where we are. I shouldn't say chaplains. People that could be there at the end of life. It does not have to be a chaplain. Because I did this before I was a chaplain, where we do POA. Jim, do you do POA?
No,
not yet. Okay. So anyone else here training POA? Okay. So, but we're trying to have more and more people train in certain things. But it doesn't matter even if you've not been trained in that. What matters is to have someone there to comfort you and to do prayers. A lot of monastics, if they're called in, will do. Actually, we've been trained to do many different pujas. In the beginning, Rinpoche just had us do Amitabha practice. Now he has us do 4 sessions of Guru Yoga Mikyo Dorje. Yeah, you can do that. I can do it with you. And you can do it for me. And then, but Rinpoche said anything is fine. But if your family is not Buddhist, this is, I think, the glitch at our center. We're a bridge generation, right? So I think we, more than anyone else, should be out there talking to our families, because they may be the people. If you haven't filled out the paperwork or don't have it on you or whatever, they may be the ones making your decisions. When I worked years ago and... a friend of mine died from AIDS. I'll never forget. Sorry. His partner of 10 years was not allowed to be there in the hospital because of his mother. She was Christian. She felt that was a sin of being gay. And so things have really changed since then, which is just wonderful. Things are so different now. And so it does not have to be your family that makes any decisions for you. And a lot of people don't want to do that on their family, or they don't trust their family, or they have too many dynamics, or they don't want to have one person from their family do it because they might think you're having favorites. So it's kind of interesting. Let me see if there's anything else here. We talked about loved ones. We talked about privacy and sharing. So I think we talked about those three. Are there any other comments or any other? Yes. For how long? I forgot to look that up. Sometimes people take the body to a funeral home and work with a funeral home. A lot of funeral homes are very aware of Buddhist needs, and they're really sensitive to Buddhist needs. So that's where the arrangement would be made. And they would just lay them in rest, and then they cremate them or whatever they want. And when he asked this question, do any of you know why she asked this about the 3 days? I mean, ideal it would be 49, but we're not in India. Yes?
What about the 16th
Karmapa? Oh, hold on. What?
The 16th Karmapa. When he died.
Right.
I think it was in a hospital. They allowed him.
It was in outside of Chicago. I've been there.
They allowed him in state for 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Hospitals don't do that.
Not actually, that was a rare thing because he was very famous and very special. But you can go to a funeral home. Hospitals don't have the room.
I heard that's like virtually impossible to ask a hospital to do.
Right. As I said, not usually a hospital because of insurance and other people are waiting to get in maybe. But funeral home, yes. Now, the other thing is, what if you die at home? I told Orville I don't want him to go to jail. So
Yeah, my dad died all by himself at home.
How long was he there?
My brother, I told my brother he should have waited, because as soon as my brother got into the house and found his body, he called the emergency squad. I told him he should have waited a day or two. He said, oh, but I could already smell the...
Then it's okay to call. Yeah.
According to the Buddhists, if you're like enlightened, you're not going to decompose rapidly or something.
You don't necessarily even have to be enlightened. As long as you know certain practices, your karma affects the quality of how you are as you're passing and during that process. Winnie, do you want to talk about why 3 days? Yeah, I have also heard that. And as a Buddhist, there's a certain windows are open. Ideally, it's 49 days where you're in rest. And then you move on to your next place, the bardo, the place of in between. And we're going to tap on this later. Well, definitely, if you're here in January, it'd be great. I think the class is going to be somewhere else, but it'll be advertised. I remember when I lived in when I lived in India back in 89, the owner, we went to a restaurant, and I mean, we use the word restaurant in India. We went to a shack with an earthen floor, and you always threw your chi on the floor afterwards to keep the dust down. And every pole had a number on it because it was next to the Tibetan encampment. And that's Bodhgaya, India, is where the Buddha was enlightened. And it's a really sacred pilgrimage site. So they would open up, have restaurants certain times a year for the pilgrims. And the owner was very tearful, and we couldn't figure out why. And the woman that was waiting on us that took our order whispered, oh, well, that's her husband over there. And we're thinking, why isn't he moving? So about a week later, I noticed he was still there. And I finally asked someone else, and they said, oh, well, he's going to be there for 49 days. They filled him with mercury and salt. And I'm thinking, whoa, they can't do that in America. And so this was her third husband, I believe. And she was just so torn about it. But that was amazing to see somebody just kind of right about where you were standing over there. And no smell because of the mercury in it. But we don't do that in America. I think it was their sort of, and then later on, monks took him away. I watched that, so. Wait a minute. Do you have a question?
I have a comment.
Uh-huh.
I've shared before how fascinated I am by the process of karma and watching it in my life. And before I came here today, I had already scheduled to have lunch with my daughter. And now after hearing this talk, I know what our conversation is going to begin at lunch.
I could give you a copy. Here, give them a copy of this. Come over and take a copy of
this.
Well,
I'm not going to go all the way into it with her, but I'm going to at least get the thing started.
Yeah.
But,
nice to have.
So I'm very thankful that you came and
thank you so much for sharing that.
Filled that stepping stone in my life.
Thank you. I was kind of been nervous of whether or not a lot of people call me the angel of death, and so I thought I would swoop in today and kind of bring this up, but thank you so much. This really is something, you know, if I was in India, I wouldn't have these talks, because in India, death is just treated so differently, so much more naturally. But a lot of people, I'm just going to say one thing, but stay there. One thing people forget all the time is we're not killing patients when they're taking off of equipment. We're removing them from an artificial life support. And remember the word artificial. Please always remember that. Yes, Marilyn.
I just wanted to share how important it is to have a will even at a young age. My father had a living will, thank goodness, because I didn't have to make the decision not to put a feeding tube in him, not to have to do anything. He spelled it out for me. So the hospital followed his wishes because he had a stroke to the brainstem. You don't know if you're going to be incapacitated where you cannot make any decisions about yourself. And that took the burden off me and my brother from pulling a plug. We didn't have to. And it was just a big thing, a really big thing, super big thing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And this handout even talks about step three to go. And it says, let's see, when you're ready to have conversations, think about who you wish to speak about, when, and where you would feel most comfortable, and of course, what you want to say. And I like the icebreaker, so I thought I would read them. Here are some ways you could break the ice. I need your help with something. That's pretty general. Let's keep going. Let's see if it gets better. Remember how someone in the family died? Was it a good death or a hard death? How will yours be different? That's pretty direct. Even though I'm okay now, I'm worried that blank, and I want to be prepared. I think that's the most important thing about this. It's just this very special type of preparation that as adults, we need to be aware of completely. Now, I spoke about, so that was pretty much the little packet, but it's very well done. And then later at the end, it talks about completing the advanced directive and choosing a healthcare proxy. So we don't, in Ohio, we don't use the word proxy, but basically this is healthcare. I have so many terms going through my brain. Yeah, we have it. We have all initials at the hospital: HCPOA, Healthcare Power of Attorney. So I thought I would talk about that right now because this is maybe an easier one for most people. And usually, my husband and I have done both just in case if we're together in an accident and neither of us are able, and I see this all the time in an emergency, neither member, we even know who they are. Because sometimes accidents, there's fires and all your ideas burn up or it's lost in the vehicles and no one went back to get it. So sometimes it's nice to have that, have the healthcare power of attorney, but it's also nice to have a living will because the living will is the one that would say, in case I'm in that situation, really bad situation, of course, not just banged up. But anyway, let's just define healthcare power of attorney. Means a document that allows me to name an adult person to act as my agent to make healthcare decisions if I'm unable to do so. A really good example, someone's going to have surgery and everything looks really good, but it's still nice to have somebody around and knows that if things go south, there's someone they can contact. Because things go south, you might not be conscious or able to figure out what they're saying to you. So you have somebody that they can pick up a phone, and they're very relieved when they can do that. So I'm not going to go into it heavily, but this is, maybe I will, because this is kind of an important one. I'm kind of good at changing my mind quickly. I'm just not used to this term proxy. So a healthcare proxy is a person you choose to make decisions about your medical care if you're unable to do so. So like often people use their relatives for that. All right. But maybe I will clarify one thing though, because it needs to be done. In Ohio, in most states, they have power of attorney. And then they have healthcare durable power of attorney. So if you have someone who's your power of attorney that has nothing to do, period, with your healthcare, you need a very specific person to be that you've chosen for this, just to let you know. I've seen so many people think, oh, I have that covered. No, you've got to make sure you have it covered right. So let's read a few of the tips because it's a little bit more involved in who signs off. So when you do have a healthcare power of attorney, you can really specify all kinds of things. And for the witnesses, you have to have a witness or a notary acknowledge it, sort of like the other one. So that's good. But don't leave it at home. Make a copy of it or keep a copy at home. Make sure your doctors have it. Make sure the hospitals have it that you normally go to. Most of us are in networks now. Make sure you've scanned it on your phone or your computer and you have access to it. That really helps. So let's see, how much more time do we have? Okay, I'll go through this kind of quickly. I'm going past all the donor pages and what organs. Let's see. All right. So I'm just kind of going to read through part of this legal document. Healthcare power of attorney. I state that this is my HCPOA. I revoke any other healthcare power of attorney signed by me. So that's nice. This particularly is a document people update all the time, depending on. Orville and I have updated ours like three times so far. I understand the nature and purpose of this document, and if any provision is found to be invalid, it will affect the rest of the document. This healthcare power of attorney is in effect only when I cannot make healthcare decisions for myself. I think that's important to note. So this is not something where somebody else lords over you what your decisions. It's only if you're unconscious is usually the term. And then they have all these definitions, which we're not going to go into. Wow. I forgot how many definitions there were. So I don't think I'll go into it fully, but there are a few things you need to know. One would be you get to decide if you have a heart attack. Do you want to be revived? That's on that document. If you want to receive artificial nutrition, that's on that document. And another really big one is, have any of you heard of DNR? Do not resuscitate. Any of you watched Doc Martin years ago? One of the episodes, these little old ladies bought a tattoo machine and tattooed DNR on their chest. So from time to time, we see a DNR tattoo patient come in through the hospital, and that's not a legal document. But it does indicate they probably have a DNR bracelet or a DNR in the computer. Do not resuscitate means if my heart stops beating, do not bring me back to life through physical, chemical means. Because often if they don't, do compressions, they can sometimes give you a medication. And many people want to have DNR. So that's another document, just to let you know. But it's a big one in Ohio. And I've met many people, they usually have a bracelet, like a medical bracelet has it on it. But a lot of people have tattoos across their chest with their signature, which is, I've seen people take pictures of their chest and then they have it on their phone. And I think most of the people that do this, a lot of them are doctors. They kind of know what might happen. If they're in that situation. So that's just another thing. So we only have a few minutes left. I'm going to just remind you of two things. I'm pretty sure. So the next class is a Buddhist walks out of a hospital. So the next class is, I would like us to have discussion. Is that all right with that? Are people comfortable talking about this? And I would like us to be in a circle. And I would like it if you could please download two documents. I'll have extras with me just in case. One, it's from Conversation Project. The first is your conversation starter kit. And the first one is when it comes to end of life. We're just going to, again, go over some of those pointers. And the second one was a conversation around how to be an efficient proxy. Wherever that went, it sort of flew around here. And if I only have three copies of the end of life material, but if anyone wants a copy, I have three up here. So I think that'll be it for the day. And I do have a lot of legal documents from Ohio State if anyone wants to take some of these with them. So I think we'll just leave it at that. And okay, so the second one is, where is it? Oh, how to choose a healthcare proxy. I think that's very important to know how to do that. Are there any questions before we tidy up and leave? No. Thank you so much for your patience and your willingness to listen today. And I hope this gets you sort of thinking about what decisions you might want to do. And of course, none of this is mandatory. I'm not going to stand at the door and make sure you've signed off on everything. Though I'd like to, but I won't. But I think this is really something you get to think about. And if anyone has any stories they want to share, thank you for sharing, Marilyn. And if any of you have reached out to your family, I would love to hear about it. So thanks, Tim. All right, for a moment, let's close our eyes and offer merit to so many people that are sick, that are in mental distress. Please offer all of your goodness and your patience to them so that can be relieved. Sonam di tansi zipani toni di di padrong janini jiga na ji bala du pai si pe sole jowa jowa sho. Thank you, everyone. Have a beautiful day. It's great out.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.